This morning, our lesson is, I believe, number 5 in the series of stewardship. We've covered giving, principles on giving, particularly to the local church. Last week, we talked about spending and how we can spend wisely as Christians. And one of the key factors there, one of the key perspectives there was essentially choosing a lifestyle that your spending will be able to fit into instead of letting your spending determine your lifestyle. Because as we looked at last week, some of those choices that we make, the decisions we make about where we live, what we do, and all kinds of things have a larger impacts upon our spending habits. Well, this morning, we're going to look at the third of the third leg, when it comes to our finances, which is saving. It's called The Economics of Tomorrow, I believe is the title on your outline, The Economics of Tomorrow. And this has to do with, well, really, what we do with our money today and how that impacts tomorrow. So I'll start with a couple of perspectives and definitions. First of all, how would you describe debt? How would we describe debt? Noah, how would you describe debt? Something you owe someone else, okay. What are some descriptions of debt? Or how you'd explain what debt is, or put it in context. So Noah said it's owing someone else something. Stephanie?
Borrowing what you don't have so that you can get something that you want.
Okay. All right. Anybody else? Those are both good answers, by the way. One that I thought was helpful is this. Debt is paying in the future for what I want today. Just a very simple way of paying later, getting now, the idea of debt. I'm in the debt for the thing that I have today. So, contrast to that, let's talk about savings. Savings, how would we describe savings? What are some ways in which we describe savings? Yes. Okay, that's a very good, you were always a teacher's favorite, weren't you, in class, weren't you? I believe it. Any other answers? But not quite, it's about paying today for what you'll have in the future. Debt is about paying in the future what I'll have today. Savings is about paying today for what you'll have in the future. That's I think, a perspective, again, an easy way to describe those two things. Now, and as it turns out, we serve a God who has a lot to say about the future. So whether we are in debt or are saving, whether we go into debt or we accumulate savings for the future that is to come, we serve a God who has a lot to say about the future. And ultimately, we serve a God who is sovereign over the future. So, letter C there, God is sovereign in the future. So, when it comes to our debt, when it comes to our savings, ultimately, we need to understand them and look at them in the perspective of, it's all under God's sovereign timing, and God is sovereign over the future, which should not give us a cavalier, lackadaisical attitude about debt or savings, but it should help us to, whether we save or go into debt or whatever it might be, how we manage life, doing so with the perspective that God is sovereign, God is over all. Proverbs, someone volunteered for me to read Proverbs 20:25. Someone volunteered to read that for me? Thank you, Hannah. I see that. Oh, Peter. Peter raised his hand. He actually raised his hand. I was going to call on Hannah. But Peter, you saved Hannah, so she will give you a high five. Never. So, Peter, if you go ahead and read Proverbs 20:25 for us.
It is a trap for a man to say rashly, it is holy, and after the vows to make inquiry.
Okay? What do you think, what does that mean, and how might that have to relate to wisdom when it comes to savings or indebtedness? It is a trap for a man to say rashly, it is holy, and after the vows to make inquiry. How does that, what does that mean, and how does that apply to the subject of savings or indebtedness? Any thoughts?
It sounds like you do something quick without giving any thought to the consequences.
Right. It is a trap for a man to do something quick, to act rashly, without thinking about the follow-through. Jesus speaks about this, you know, in the New Testament. Don't start, you know, before you go to war, make sure you figure out if you can win the war. Before you start building a building, make sure you can finish it. That's the same principle there. So how does that then, obviously, well, how would that apply to the issue of savings or indebtedness? If the concern is to rashly do something without thinking is folly, particularly when it comes to indebtedness, to rashly make a purchase and then see how you can afford it, or then to ask the Lord to provide for it, is a folly. In other words, it's not wisdom, or it's not spirituality or spiritual to act impulsively and then to think about consequences or the logistics necessarily. It's ignorance in that regard isn't bliss, it is foolishness. It's wise to consider the future, and it's folly not to. That doesn't mean perfectly consider. Doesn't mean if you consider, you're always going to come up with the best answer in all circumstances, because obviously we won't be able to know all the factors and be able to always come up with the best answer. But to strive to consider and be wise before you make a vow, make a purchase, whatever it might be, is wisdom. Some people think that, well, Jesus in Matthew 6 commands us not to be anxious about tomorrow. Some people choose to apply that by just not thinking about tomorrow. They're just going to live and not even care about tomorrow because, hey, you know what? I'm not even going to consider saving for retirement or saving for a new car or whatever else. I'm just not going to worry about it. And then when tomorrow comes, they are in a position of significant difficulty that may or may not have been mitigated by a wiser planning for the future. In other words, you can plan for the future without being anxious about it. You can plan, and you ought to be wise in preparing for the future without being anxious about it. Being anxious about the future when it comes to finances is watching that stock market tick down, or watching the balance on the 401k kind of take a hit, or whatever it might be, and being having your world completely wrapped around by that. I remember years ago, 2016. I almost never plan a sermon like months in advance. But in November 2016, I'd planned to preach a sermon about God being in control, because it was a pretty contested election, if you can remember that far back. And I planned it and wrote it all well in advance, because the truth was the truth, regardless of who won and which side won. And one of my applications to that was, if your preferred candidate won and you are elated, you may have misaligned priorities. You may be looking for the right thing or the wrong things in the future. And if you are devastated, it may be the same thing. In other words, we have to be careful about how we respond to engage our own security, our own contentedness, based upon those factors that are generally outside of our control, which is including elections and economic markets and those things. So we are to grow in our understanding, I think, as Christians, of how God wants us to think about the future, including how we are to think about when it comes to money. And again, I think we often feel burdened about financial issues looking towards the future, particularly with, you know, like in modern days, inflation and all kinds of economic hard. It can be a lot that can cause us anxiety if we're not, if we're prone to do that. We have to walk that fine line between focusing on and trying to figure all the things out and being anxious about it, and just not caring at all, not thinking about it, and walking through ignorant. We have to be careful, because we know that we don't control tomorrow. We're not promised tomorrow. And all we can do is the best we have with what God has given us today, and trust Him that He will be faithful to take care of us whatever comes to pass. But again, God is sovereign over the future. So this is an important, again, this is an important principle to remember when we're thinking about debts, we're thinking about savings, and all of life, particularly in finances, to remember that it is God's future. So, number two, speaking about debt, this is, I think, a good way to think about it, or a helpful way. Debt is mortgaging your future. You're putting a mortgage on your future, putting a lien on your future, an obligation on the future that you will have to pay back. Debt is a future tax upon your income. So the question, it sounds really bad, but so a question is, what's the purpose of debt, or what is the benefit of debt? Why would someone even consider going into debt? What are some reasons? Tom, I see that hand.
House,
okay. It would be great if we could save up enough money in 4 years, after 4 years of high school or 4 years of college, to then buy a house, but that's just not the way it is. It costs a lot of money. So debt is the vehicle to be able to allow you to buy expensive houses in, or any house, really, because all housing is expensive. Okay? Someone else? What's that?
Medical bills.
Yeah. We know one of the blessings of our place and history and location is we have generally access to medical care. And then the grim reaper of the medical system is the bills that come due that are often more than we imagined, and insurance covers less than we hoped. Saving for medical bills, okay? What else? What's another reason, or debtedness, you know, when it comes to medical bills or house? What's another debt? Why might that be a thing to consider? Starting a business, right? Starting a business. If you want to start a business, you might not have the capital to do all the things you need to do. Debt to begin a business is a tool to get off your feet, or get on your feet. Actually, microloans are a way in which I know over the course of the last several decades have been particularly helpful in helping communities in not first world places have businesses where people can actually start and become economically sustainable from that kind of debt. So mortgages, car loans, potentially depending upon situations, education might be a reason to consider debt. Again, in our current economy, that's the way it is. Now the question is, does God forbid being in debt? Well, to answer that, I have a list of verses here that we won't look through because I think we'll run out of time if we do. Where the Lord has stipulations on lending. So like, for instance, in Exodus 22, it says this: if you lend money to my people, to the poor among you, you are not to exact or act as a creditor to them. You should not charge them interest. Or usury is the picture there. In Leviticus 25, do not take usurious interest from him, but revere your God, for that your countrymen may live with you. You should not give him your silver at interest, nor your food for gain. So there was in Israel a requirement to not charge usury to Jews in loaning. But there was a reason to potentially be indebted to someone else. Now, one of the chief reasons, one of the chief examples, is often the case where an Israelite or a person, even outside of Israel, might sell themselves into state of servitude, because the options are servitude and survive, or stay by myself and die. Those are the, and you would then be indebted to your the person who then own or who'd own you for that time frame. You would sell yourself out to them, hire, you know, for their care for you. And then in the scriptures, there's the year of Jubilee when debts are canceled, slaves are released. So there was this time when those who had to do that for reasons of survival would be have their lands restored and have their freedom restored, those kinds of things. So there are reasons potentially that indebtedness is necessary, and those who would loan or be those who are creditors are given particular regulations. Jesus says in Luke 6, love your enemies and do good and lend, expecting nothing in return. And your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High, for he himself is kind to ungrateful and evil men. You know, lend, expecting nothing in return, though you may receive a return from those whom you lend. And then even in the parable of the talents, the master says, you should have at least, even if you didn't go out and double the stuff I gave you, you could have put it in the bank and even had interest on that. That would have been a good thing. And again, the picture is that in the economy of Scripture, there is nothing inherently sinful about borrowing or about lending. The issue is how we do those things. We have to remember, though, that we'll come to it in a minute here, but there are, the reality of the situation is the lender is a servant, or the borrower servant to the one who lends. So we always remember those dynamics. Paul in Romans chapter 14, I believe it's Romans chapter 12 actually, we're to owe nothing to anyone except for love. We're not ordered to give custom who custom is due. We're to give essentially our obligations, those whom is due, but to owe nothing, to have no outstanding debts to one another except love. So again, I think the answer is God does not forbid borrowing, but there must be wisdom in borrowing. So the question is, how do we manage, how do we figure out what borrowing, whether it's going to be sinful or not? Well, there's a couple of examples, a couple of factors that might be important to consider as we think about any type of getting into debt. Borrowing can become sinful when we wrongly presume upon God to provide for us, like we read in Proverbs. If we make a vow and then we ask him to provide for that without, in a rash way of having gotten over our skis, as it were. In other words, trusting God for something he's not promised us or not provided us the means to acquire is likely sinful. Acting impetuously is not necessarily the same. Is not the same as acting in faith. It's often an example of tempting or putting God to the test. We cannot manipulate God to do what we want him to do. We have to be careful of that. It's also presuming upon God for our debt. If we, you know, and we just kind of get into debt kind of haphazardly or flippantly, ignores God's sovereignty over the future. We need to be careful that we don't have this presumption that things are going to be okay because they always have been. It's always been okay, and all these things. We need to be careful that we're not to operate as if tomorrow's going to be the exact same as today. That's the same attitude that the unbeliever has. We have the perspective of eternity, and we ought to say always, if the Lord wills, we'll do these things in the future, and always keeping his provision and his sovereignty front and center as we think about our finances. So there's dangers in borrowing potentially, but there's also wisdom in borrowing. Again, borrowing is permitted. I thought this was helpful in the curriculum. With Christian liberty, we have the freedom to borrow for different things, depending upon circumstances and needs and desires. It said Christian liberty allows the opportunity for Christian stupidity. I mean, we have the freedom to to make bad choices. Freedom as in, not that it's good, as in we do that, and we can essentially find out our foolishness sometimes too late, as it were. Again, we have, there are good reasons to think of borrowing, whether it's for a house, depending upon the situation, for a vehicle, borrowing for business costs. So many of us, I think, see the benefit of borrowing money and even the need to be able to do that, depending upon the circumstances. But then again, if we ask how many of us like having debts, nobody likes having debts. The benefit of borrowing is good. The having of the debt is not the best thing. Again, because the rich rules over the poor and the borrower becomes servant to lender. Again, although borrowing isn't always sin, it's always a form of servitude. The classic parent line is, you know, when you're living under my roof, you know, you follow my rules. And depending upon the place, that can actually be the bank's roof for quite a long time until it becomes your roof. But ultimately, the person is, it's their property on loan with the collateral of the house if you pay back the loan. And remember that paying back loans is a matter of honoring the Lord. It's a matter of righteous behavior. Furthermore, the inability to pay back loans, particularly in the Old Testament, was a sign of God's judgment upon the nation. In other words, if they did not follow the commands of God, instead of being the head, and instead of being the leader in the region, the people that would be the Israel would be those who would borrow and not lend. They would be servants to those around them, subjugated. Now, so I've talked about debt as a mortgaging the future. Talked about the it's wise to consider going into debt depending on what circumstances we have, and that there is an obligation to repay the debts that are there, that we have an obligation to owe, to give what is due to whoever is owed. And as I think it's a caveat to say this, it's important to remember that borrowing on any level is ultimately a moral issue. And if borrowing on any level essentially means have now, pay later, that goes for everything from our home. It goes to all the way up to our geopolitical issues of governments and spending. It's a moral issue. It also has to do with, even though, and as some do, as myself, if you your monthly, your weekly budget, all you do is you spend on a credit card, you pay the credit card off each month. It's essentially the same transactional nature as if you're using your bank account every time. But until that check from the bank account goes, you're still in debt for those things. So it's a moral issue that is not to be taken lightly. And there are various opinions, various encouragements about how to manage home budgets and those kinds of things. Dave Ramsey, I believe, essentially says credit cards are a no-go for Christians, period, end of story. And so, again, there's different philosophies there, but ultimately every area of any kind of debtedness is a moral issue that we need to be careful. Again, because any of our debt puts a mortgage on our future. It limits our financial flexibility and the options we have down the road to be able to honor God with our money and our time and all things. Furthermore, debt impacts relationships. How could a debt impact a relationship? How could debt impact a relationship?
Who would do such a thing?
I appreciate that completely fictionalized story there, Lon. That's great. So, a large purchase without telling your spouse, okay? No. Yeah, getting into debt while married can cause strain, but also bringing debt into a marriage can be a significant strain on a relationship. I just remember back when we were young and at Christian college, generally if boy met girl at Christian college and went through the 4 years of Christian college, boy might have been planning for, you know, to be able to pay off his loans in an amount of time, which could be good. But then boy marries girl who also has that, and the loans are doubled, and the income might not be as great as he thought, and that's a significant burden upon the family. Not insurmountable, necessarily, but a significant impact upon relationships. I remember it was 5 years ago, a friend from college had said he is now down into the sub-$10,000 loans for his schooling from college and grad school for he and his wife. That's nearly 20 years after graduating college. That's a long, long time to be now under the $10,000 thing, which was significant. So, I mean, that's just it's a significant burden that would impact your ability to buy a home, to get a loan, to do any kinds of things. So it would have significant relational life issues. So again, debt is not something to take in lightly, but it's also not something to view as like a pox, you know, that you can never have anything to do with it, because, again, there's wisdom in debt. Now, here's an interesting thing. This is not for us, so I can talk about it now. But thinking about church building projects, by God's grace, he provided all of the funds we needed for our projects, and we are blessed by that. But most churches don't have that same experience. And the question arises often is, what do? We save until we can buy the building, build the building, whatever it might be? Do we do a campaign? Do we do a loan? What do we do? And one of the things that I remember looking at with numbers and in with different pastors years ago was there is a significant, and I think rightly rightly intended aversion from churches to have any kind of debt, because we don't want to be serving anybody. But I was looking at numbers for a couple different churches, and churches that, say, like, did a building project and they had a loan for some of it, a portion of it. When you factor in all of the things with increasing costs and all those things, by the time the church brought in the money to pay for the building, it would have been 5 years later, and the costs have already gone up 20%, so they wouldn't have even had enough at that time. So there's sometimes wisdom in even making those kinds of decisions, whether it's individual or churches, whatever, because of the changing nature of economics. And so again, whether it's individual, whether it's a business, whether it's as a church congregation, debt is never something to enter into lightly, but it's not necessarily sinful, wrong, or foolish in and of itself. It has to be done with careful planning, trusting the Lord, and in walking in faith. So, what about making decisions about borrowing? Again, this is, what are some of the decisions that we need to go into it? Again, this is the big philosophical questions that we talked about already. The first question is, do I need it, and why do I need it? That great question of wants versus needs. And needs can vary from person to person, stage in life to stage in life. Do I need it to fulfill the lifestyle that I've chosen to honor God, or is it to fulfill a need that I have to honor me in my lifestyle? That's a good question. Is my decision to do this, to buy this car, to buy this house, to whatever it might be, is to fulfill a need I have in a lifestyle, or is it to that honors God, that is, or to make me look good? And the curriculum, one of the examples was to make all I think they actually had the word babes in there, to buy the right car to have the babes look at you. You know, that's okay. If that's your reason for the buying the car you're buying, you probably need to reprioritize and not borrow the money for that. That's not a good reason to do that. So essentially examine your heart to see what's driving your spending decision to go into debt. Secondly, obviously, the question is, can you afford it? Now, I love this. Saturday Night Live is not generally a good show to watch. There's a skit from Steve Martin back a long time ago, and if you look up Steve Martin Saturday Night Live debt or spending, it's a skit where he and his wife are like, "Oh, we're just we don't have any money to do this, or what's going on? We're having financial problems. And the guy says, I have this book. I can help you get out of debt. And it's basically, don't spend more than you have, or don't spend more than you make. And he says, it's really one chapter long. It's only one page long. Just don't, if you don't have the money, don't buy it. And that was, it was a funny, humorous 5-minute skit. But ultimately, the question is, can you afford to buy the thing you want to buy? Now, indebtedness means even looking long-term. Can I afford it? And some of the things like to consider in buying those things are more than just the purchase price. Like whether it's houses or cars, what are some other factors about affordability that you ought to, as a wise person, consider before signing your name on that loan? What are some other than the price of the sticker price of the car or the sticker price of the house, what are some other things that you ought to consider before saying, yes, I can afford that loan? And that's a good debt to get into. What are some things to consider? Tom?
I think one of the most important things for kids is when you come out of college or when you go out and work, how much money do you make?
Yeah.
It's all about how much money you make. Mm-hmm. We're all in a different place.
Yep.
Always all in a different place. But you have to look at your money coming in.
What's your income? Yep.
What do I have to have?
Yeah.
And then start subtracting down from that number. And if you have a spouse, then there's two numbers to put together.
Yep.
But then you also have to look at down the road. What if you have kids or, something happens?
The future costs of the expenses. What are some expenses that you ought to consider when it comes to, like, for instance, buying a house? What are some things that aren't on the, when you buy the house, you're not necessarily paying for that lease? It's not the sticker price of the house. Stephanie.
Maintaining all of the yard and the appliances.
Maintenance. Okay. Nancy.
Insurance, utilities.
Taxes. And we know a few things about utilities, insurance, taxes. They just go up. And so if you plan for those things, or like with a car, you have license, registration, you have insurance, you have sales tax on the car, you have gas, you have planning for big repairs, even if it's a new car, you have planning for small repairs or maintenance, like oil changes and tire rotations, those things that, I mean, you have all these other things in the cost category that if this loan for this house's car, it really maxes out your budget, and you haven't considered taxes, insurance, maintenance, whatever it might be, you are going to be in a significant world of hurt. And so then that would mean, well, then I can't afford it. That comes back to the point of how much do I have that I can spend on this? And that means I can't afford it. But you get to that answer not by looking at the sticker price and looking at my, my bank account today. You have to take it all into a lot more into account. And so it's the issue of affordability is more than just the sticker price. That's why everything is, if it's $19.99, it's going to be more than $20 because of tax. Well, of course we know that. Because that's whether you're buying a 99-cent thing at the Quick Trip or whatever else, it's going to be more than 99 cents. Same thing applies with cars and houses. There's a lot more that goes into that. I remember when we were looking at houses in town here, when we were moving to town, and my wife loved these older houses with character. That's what it was, character. And I said, the houses are great, but every time you say character, that adds like $200 or $300 a month just in maintenance. That's what I'm saying, just to kind of keep it, either maintenance or in like draftiness or whatever else. It adds to the cost. And so those are things. Again, now I might have been wrong on those things, on those exact numbers. But the issue is, there's always this cost that you don't see. It's not written on the price tag of the thing. So again, consider, can you afford it? And if you can't afford it, how can I bring in more money? Can I get a second job for a time? Can, a spouse, if she's not working, can she get a job or a second job? If we need this, is that a possibility? Could I liquidate some assets? Could I sell some things that I have? Could I, whether that's, on Craigslist, at a pawn shop, whatever else it might be, or can I spend less in other areas? Can I give up you know, getting that luxury that I like every day or 2 days to put that money directly towards something else? Can I buy something less expensive? Those are all issues of, can I afford it? One of the ways to plan to afford it is to start saving for it before you buy it. To intentionally put aside whatever you think your payment might be months before you start you buy that investment or buy that product. Then you'll see how that impacts your bottom line. Are you able to do that? It's a good way to train. Most don't do that, but that is a good way to plan for the future. So we need to be careful about that kind of, be careful from impetuous spending or borrowing. Be patient so that we can think clearly, think carefully, make wiser decisions for our when we do go into debt. Again, when you have a debt, the question is having the loan and the thing that the loan is for worth the cost of losing that as collateral if I can't pay it, or of just having that extra pressure and stress of having to pay it off? There's always that kind of issue. And there's different kinds of debt. Again, we mentioned it before, but or kind of in passing, but housing and even vehicles at times are different. They're secured types of debt, but the unsecured debt of credit cards that kind of roll when people don't pay it off, it's a crushing debt. One of the worst habits that young people can get into is to spend on a credit card and say, I can pay the minimum or less than the full balance. That is a dangerous and crushing habit to get into. Now, there are times in life when you may not be able to pay the entire balance because in the providence of God, things occur that are outside of planning and in your availability. That is that having a rolling credit card balance doesn't mean you've been sinful or you've been unwise. It may mean that God in his providence and grace has brought about a circumstance that you had the ability to pay for the credit card at the point in time so you could have that thing done, that furnace replaced, that car fixed. And now you've got to work hard to pay that off. But most consumer debt is the TV, the more often the stuff that I don't need, the eating out, the whatever else, that just kind of rolls onto it, and then it's crippling. We've had friends who've had, even as young people in the 20s, just crippling credit card debt. It's an issue of sinful choices that need to be corrected most often. Thirdly, when it comes to managing decisions, making decisions about borrowing, have you sought counsel? In general, seek counsel. Ask those who not only are wise with money, but also generally have the right perspective on life and God. Ask a mature Christian brother or sister, likely someone who's maybe in a different stage of life than you, who can give you some wisdom. Don't be like Rehoboam and only ask your friends or your age. Listen to the advice of your elders. But also, your elders can be wrong too sometimes. So, you need to keep that in mind and weigh carefully those decisions. So, now, living in debt, again, we have to be careful. If you're in debt, the obligation is to strive to get out of debt as quick as possible, because we're servants to those to whom we owe, and we need to, again, strive to not owe anything to anyone except for love. Now, I want to close out this Sunday school lesson, because I'm not going to get to the last part about saving. I'll see if I can slim that down for next week or do something different. I want to talk about debt, though, and speak, because you're going to know people who are in debt and even have debts they can't afford. I've heard the term house poor back when I was working at my old job, which happens. They buy their house they can afford, but they realize they didn't consider taxes, insurance, transportation, all the things. They didn't consider all those things. So they're They own a house, but they have no money to spend or no money to save. And so that, or credit cards, whatever else, is an opportunity for us, if we're careful and wise and bold, to speak about what is abundantly necessary. In other words, debt and conversations about debt is an opportunity to share the gospel with an unbeliever. How could we use conversations about debt to talk about, to be the open door to talk about the gospel of Jesus Christ? How could we do that? Noah? Okay, we have Jesus' parable in Matthew 18. Okay, how else might we speak about or use debt, the subject of debt, to as a springboard to talk about the gospel, as an opportunity to speak clearly and maybe to a listening ear about the gospel of Jesus Christ? Stephanie. Which is the exact point of Matthew 18, which is the issue of the servant who owed an unpayable debt was forgiven graciously by his master. The unbelievers have a debt to God. We have a debt that we can't pay. Not we, unbelievers. Unbelievers have a debt they can't pay. That debt can only be paid by God himself. And we have our debt paid in full when we place our faith in Christ. But for Christians too, for believers, debt can be a conversation springboard speaking about faithfulness to Christ as a Christian. We are eternally indebted to God for his mercy to us. Not that we're going to ever pay him back, and to try to pay him back would be an affront to him. But he has purchased us with his blood. You know, Paul says, live in a manner worthy of the calling with which you've been called. In 1 Corinthians chapter 6, you've been bought with a price, therefore glorify God in your body. Peter says, as obedient children, do not be conformed to the former lusts which were yours in your ignorance, but like the Holy One who called you, be holy yourselves in all your behavior, because it's written, you should be holy for I am holy. If you address the Father as Father, the one who judges impartially according to each one's work, conduct yourselves in fear during the time of your stay on earth. This issue of this obligation to the one who's bought us. So we have this, again, this opportunity when we speak about, again, debt is crushing more people than we probably realize. And on the behind the veneer of the taken care of yard and the nice, you know, clean outside house, there may well be one or two adults in that house who are anxious and stressed out completely because they are in debt, they're over their head, and they don't know what to do. Now, while we don't want to be joking or dismissive of those real world consequences, we can use the opportunity that brings us by saying, you know, you also have another debt you're not even thinking about, that you can't pay, that only Christ has paid. So it's an opportunity again to speak of Christ and to magnify him in the gospel in all circumstances. Well, our time is done. Let me close this in prayer. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for this morning as we talked about debt, indebtedness. Lord, bless our time of fellowship now to follow. And Lord, as those who are coming for our service this morning, give them safety on the road. And Lord, thank you in Christ's name. Amen.